Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning. You are listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain on the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam First Peoples. My name is Kira, and we've got a show with, I guess the general theme today would be looking at censorship, freedom of expression, and hate speech, and the ways that these concepts kind of intertwine with each other in a lot of contemporary debates, with the particular goal of us getting to an interview that I had with some folks working in the Bennett Library at SFU, as well as in other departments and offices at SFU, around the issue of freedom of expression in libraries. But I am going to start us off with some music to ease us into our morning. The first track that we're going to hear today is going to be Anemua by Tinariwen. And it's a nice, folky, kind of rocky track just to ease us into our Tuesday morning here. Hope you're having a wonderful start to your day, and I'm really looking forward to talking with you more.
Nemo hartem dam ufan artay no man.
Nemo hartem dam ufan artay no man. Nemo hartem dam ufan artay no man.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You are listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM. So to ease us into our conversation today on censorship and freedom of expression and hate speech and the kind of intertwining tendrils of these different topics, I wanted to give some background. So looking at Encyclopedia Britannica, the definition of censorship would be the changing or the suppression or prohibition of speech or writing that is deemed subversive to the common good. So kind of broadening that a little bit, censorship is an expression of authority and an expression of power that impacts the circulation of ideas and information. And the ways that it is enacted are often very linked to power, where power lies and what ideals are considered to be beneficial by the standards of power-holding institutions, or even beneficial to those institutions. Along with this, we can see there's folks like this, like journalist Bidisha Marmara, who wrote an article for Cambridge University on the subject. And Bidisha reminds us that censorship is also about whose voices are given space to be heard. With, you know, certain groups who may be lacking power, such as institutionally or socially marginalized peoples, often being denied the ability or even like a platform to share their knowledge and to share their ideas. And I think it's really important to be aware of and cautious of censorship, as I'm sure many of us are aware. Often censorship can occur where there is an attempt to repress information. And because it is a tool of power, it can be used to silence threats to powerful institutions. And of course, you know, as politically engaged people, it's important to be aware of where that is happening and be able to respond to that. And understandably, with how censorship functions, it often does get tangled into discussions of freedom of expression. You know, with arguments for and legislation around freedom of expression often working against the possible, like, use of censorship as a tool of power and control. But it does seem, from my perspective, and I'm sure this resonates for some people who are listening, that many contemporary debates around freedom of expression have chosen to ignore or are maybe just not clear about the connection and relationship between power and censorship, particularly where we've seen these instances of freedom of expression becoming a rallying call for those who desire to spread hate against marginalized groups. You know, in these cases, there's what seems to be, in my perspective, a clear skimming over of the reality that powerful groups, both institutionally and socially, have more power in these circumstances than marginalized groups, more power to silence forms of ideas or being or speech that may be deemed offensive to them, that may challenge their power or the status that they've been able to build as a group. And I think this is really important to recognize that this comes up in confusion around attempts to protect marginalized groups from hate and attempts to build safe communities for all peoples, and where those get confused with attempts to repress speech or ideas. There seems to be a recurring theme that where hateful speech is being spread, when there are attempts to redress these hateful expressions, the response is, well, you are limiting free speech. And, you know, on this topic, you know, the American Civil Liberties Association has noted that in American legal cases around freedom of expression, and I'm sure there is some overlap for Canadian legal cases as well, although obviously we are not the same legal system. But in these American legal cases, the offensiveness of an idea or statement is not simply grounds for restriction of freedom of expression or freedom of speech. The deciding factor is whether this expression can cause, quote, direct and imminent harm. And I think that's really important to keep in mind. You know, when we see reactions to hateful speech, and when these reactions turn into legal cases, it's not simply a restriction of expression of an idea that may be offensive. It's an effort to protect marginalized peoples, often, because hate speech does not exist in a vacuum. It doesn't exist on its own. There are many ways in which hateful speech and hateful expression against marginalized peoples can turn into, like, violence and legitimate danger for these people. And this is where we see, you know, laws in Canada around our Charter of Rights and Freedoms coming into play, and our laws against hate speech, where we see, you know, the, you know, BC Office of Human Rights noting that we need to pay attention to the danger that hate against marginalized groups can cause. You know, they have noted that hate speech is legislated against, and there are regulations around this, because with hate speech, there is a likelihood to expose marginalized groups to detestation and vilification, which has very real implications for physical safety as well as general well-being of community members. So, you know, it's kind of important then to keep in mind, I think, these differences between censorship and limits on hate speech. And I know this is something that a lot of us are very aware of. These conversations are really at the forefront, I think, right now, and have been for quite a long time. But just in the context of the interview and the discussion that we're going to be sharing later today, recognizing where censorship and freedom of speech diverge from each other can be really important to keep in mind when we're looking at how all of this functions. And on a personal note, I think that in addressing these contentions around freedom of expression, it might actually be beneficial to take a step back from personal desires and beliefs and look at collective needs of a community. What might it look like to protect communities from the circulation of inaccurate and harmful information? How can we prioritize the safety of all people within our community while also kind of forefronting the protection and the needs of the most marginalized? And interestingly, the Encyclopedia Britannica has noted something similarly in their discussions of censorship and freedom of expression, stating that the importance of the link between contemporary debates about freedom of expression in the quote-unquote West and Western ideals of individualism and individual freedom. These are very, very strong ideals within, like, Western, quote-unquote Western North American culture, rooted in long histories of the powerful influence of Christianity and like capitalism as both an economic system and a cultural system here in North America. And, you know, the emphasis in these debates within this context is on self-expression, on personal freedom and personal good over a sense of collective responsibility. You know, there's a quote from the Encyclopedia Britannica that says, "To make much of freedom of expression is to encourage a liberation of the self from the constraints of community." When the emphasis of these debates around freedom of expression become about a personal desire to be able to say and believe whatever you desire, whatever is right for you personally, whatever fits your ideals around your freedom, it kind of negates a certain sense of community responsibility. And, you know, there's many ways to interpret this, but I think it's an important piece to potentially keep in mind when we look at these debates, when we look at what it means to have freedom of expression, and when we look at what it means to try and build safe communities for all people. So that's my little bit of explanation on kind of where this discussion today is kind of coming from, and the different pieces that are really involved in these debates around censorship and freedom of expression. But let's just listen to another song before I introduce the interview that we're going to be hearing today. The next track that we've got on our list is by Aoife Nessa Francis. This is Emptiness Follows, and after that you'll hear more from me.
Just time. Oh. CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. As a campus and community station, CJSF strives to provide points of view that are rarely expressed on mainstream media. This includes music that is not the top 40 and news you will not find on the big media outlets. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca. Just a bend in time.
And how does it feel together? All right, you are listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM. We are currently broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Coquitlam First Peoples, located on Burnaby Mountain. And if you're just tuning in, we had a little bit of a discussion earlier on about censorship, freedom of expression, and hate speech, where these things intertwine, things to keep in mind when we're investigating these debates around what freedom of expression can mean, where it butts up against censorship, where freedom of expression and hate speech get confused. And the point of that discussion was kind of to give context for a really fantastic interview that I had the opportunity to do with a couple of people who are working out of Bennett Library here at SFU, as well as another SFU employee, not a library worker, but working in areas of equity. And the discussion was essentially taking, you know, these questions around freedom of expression and applying them to the world of libraries. There is, you know, a very long history of libraries acting as like important public spaces that are designed for all people. Especially this is public libraries I'm speaking about, as spaces for all people, and they have historically held a role and responsibility in protecting freedom of expression and freedom of ideas. But this becomes really contentious and difficult to come to terms with when we see that part of that historical responsibility and role of public libraries has led to situations where hateful materials are in some cases circulating within public library systems. The discussion was really around, like, what does that mean? How do we address this, and how do we balance needs for to maintain the roles of libraries as public spaces and spaces that are designed for all people, with the needs to protect marginalized members of our communities and respond to injustice when we see it happening around us. So without further ado, this is my interview with Julia Lane and Chloe Riley of Bennett Library, as well as Tess Williams, who is an employee of SFU. I really hope that this interview offers you some insight. It's certainly not a discussion that led to any very clear answers. This debate within the world of libraries has been happening for many years, but I think it offers some interesting perspectives, and I was very, very, very grateful for everyone who participated.
Thank you, everyone, for being here. I'm really excited to talk with you all today. For those listening, I'm wondering if we could each go and introduce ourselves, what we do, and I guess what we're excited about for this conversation today. I can go first. I'm Kira, as those of you listening probably know already. I'm a volunteer with CJSF, also a former SFU student and a former library employee. I'm really excited to talk about some really interesting, like, questions and conversations in the world of libraries and freedom of information today.
Hello, thank you. My name's Julia. I work in the Bennett Library at Simon Fraser University, but I'm a non-librarian library worker. So I work as a writing services coordinator in the Student Learning Commons. So I do a lot of work around student writing support. And so some of these questions around intellectual freedom and privacy and sort of library collection practices and library Policies are things that I've learned about as I've come to work in the library, but not things that I got any sort of training around or any been involved in any of sort of the more back end conversations. So I'm excited to learn from my colleagues and think about hard things together.
Hi, thanks for having me. My name's Chloe. I'm a librarian also working mostly out of Bennett Library. And my role is on focusing on external communication and kind of public events. So I don't really deal directly with collections and collections policy, which I know is kind of some of what this conversation might entail. But what I am bringing to it, I hope, is some of the kind of understanding of the values and the professional kind of guidance that is underlying some of this, and also some of the ways in which this profession really needs to grapple more seriously with these issues. And hopefully I can talk a little bit about that. And I'm really looking forward to being able to have this conversation. And thank you so much for hosting it. I think it's such a crucial one and so critical to have and to really be engaging with. And obviously this will just be maybe a starting place for us all to be having this conversation. But I'm really looking forward to being in conversation with you all about it.
And I'm Tess. I'm a systems consultant for the Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences. So I'm an SFU staff member. I am not a librarian. So I guess I'm bringing a non-librarian opinion today. And I'm also a fourth generation settler, living and working on unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples. And what I'm looking to bring, I guess a non-library opinion, as well as I'm generally looking into trans equity in a lot of different areas, including especially healthcare lately. So thanks for having me, everyone.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm really excited about this conversation. It's very personally important to me. So I guess I'll give some context to everyone out there in the world of radio who might not be familiar with kind of the responsibilities and the roles that libraries have held historically around the kind of protections of freedom of information, freedom of expression. So I did a little research before coming in today and took a look at the Canadian Federation of Library Associations website and found that there is a statement, and the first iteration of this statement actually goes back to 1974. And it says that the Canadian Federation of Library Associations affirms that libraries have a core responsibility to support, defend, and promote the universal principles of intellectual freedom and privacy. And they go on to say that libraries have a core responsibility to safeguard and facilitate access to constitutionally protected expressions of knowledge, imagination, ideas, and opinion, including those which some individuals and groups consider unconventional, unpopular, and unacceptable. And this is something that has been kind of in my understanding, and for the other library folks in this conversation, please correct me if I'm wrong, a really important aspect of how libraries have functioned over time. It's a historically very important kind of role for libraries, but it gets really complicated and contentious when we have to come to terms with materials in libraries that are, in my opinion, I've encountered in my work in libraries, materials that are potentially hateful or problematic, I guess, to use another word. I'm hoping that's what we could talk about today, those issues that come up around those types of materials circulating in libraries and still maintaining that responsibilities that libraries have. I'm wondering if anyone would like to jump in with any kind of their own thoughts around that particular responsibility that libraries have and what that means for libraries.
I'm happy to talk a little bit about this. One of the things that thank you for kind of providing that introduction to it. One of the ways that I think that intellectual freedom and this value of intellectual freedom, which underpins so much of libraries' work and sort of the professionalism of librarians, and it comes across through in this commitment to standing up against censorship. And this is a pretty big issue. Like book bans and book challenges have been historically an issue. But we see, if you pay any attention to kind of the news that comes out about libraries and book challenges,